You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barrett, where I'm your host, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over. And I am so glad you're here because I've got one of the greatest clinical material mind human beings ever. And Tazir, I just got a chance to meet you last year for the first time, but you are a hero. Just keep showing up for us at the COVID conference. So I am so pumped. And so if you're listening, today we're going to be talking about how we bridge the gap, optimizing your restorative treatment. But not a lot of people talk about how we bridge the gap between material selection and clinical application. You're going to see this guy is brilliant. So, and there's some things that we don't talk about that we're going to talk about today. And I don't want you to miss that. So stick around here. A couple show notes. We have so many people. We had over 38,000 of you opt in for the conference. And some of you are younger dentists or dental students. And you're like, what's the podcast thing? I'll tell you what it is. We're just showing up and having fun with our friends who are great speakers or teachers. And so here's what I want you to do. Go down in that little button. I don't know if you're listening on Spotify or Stitcher or iTunes. If you're listening to this podcast right now, just go down to that button, hit the subscribe button, because I want you to show up. You're going to see every single week, I'm going to bring you a brand new expert in dentistry, and we're just going to bring you some great thought processes so you can create a better practice and a better life. And I don't want you to miss out. So keep showing up. Also, people always ask, what the heck do you guys do? I don't even know what we do sometimes. So our core business is we're practice coaches. And so our whole goal is I love this profession. I want people to enjoy it. And so if you're a practice owner and you're thinking, gosh, I think my practice could be a little bit better, or I'm a little bit stressed, or I'm working too hard, or I don't like writing off all this dentistry and, you know, working in PPOs. That's what we do. We help dentists get out of that, or just improve the conditions, the predictability in your office. Dentistry is the greatest profession ever, but it's often not dentistry. It's how you practice it that makes you love it that much. And I just want you to love it. So check us out at actdental.com if you just are looking for a better way to practice and enjoy your life. Now, I'm going to introduce my guest because, Tazir, I have gotten to know you, like I said, in the last year. And I remember the first time you were on, I was like, okay, Dr. Mark Kreiman kind of introduced us. And I'm like, wow, this guy's really smart. And then Bill Robbins looked at me and he's like, no, he's not really smart. He's wicked smart. Like, this is really good stuff. So I know that a lot of listeners have heard you, but if somebody's listening for the first time, I want them to know who you are. So who's Tazir Suleiman? So I want to say that right.
Yes. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you very much for having me. I am honored to be here with you and with your listeners. I am an assistant professor at the UNC Adams School of Dentistry in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I'm in the Division of Comprehensive Oral Health. I gained my clinical certificate in operative dentistry at UNC. And I did my PhD in dental materials from the Department of Prosthetic Dentistry and Biomaterials from the University of Turku in Finland. It was in collaboration with the University of North Carolina. The reason that I did it in Finland is because the Scandinavian countries are very well known for their advancements in research and biomaterial science. And as a restorative dentist and as a clinician, I always had questions in mind. You know, why am I selecting this material? Am I making the right choice? Am I applying it correctly? And so I'm really happy and honored to be in a position where I can, you know, have these questions in mind. I can go to my laboratory at the dental school, execute a research project and have some findings that we are capable of publishing in the literature and sharing it with clinicians. And again, you know, I'm just a clinician who has many questions and trying to seek answers and translating that along as we progress forward.
Yeah, it's so cool. And on top of it, I think you have a pretty unique place in the marketplace. There's not, you know, as in anything, it's always fun to watch somebody who really occupies a space in dentistry that not a lot of people occupy. So, you know, we're going to talk about this space between the, you know, material selection and the clinical application, because it's true. You know, talk about the why of this. I am, you know, I've been in dentistry for all these years. I can't remember a time that dentistry was changing so fast and it was so exciting, but the material production has been off the charts, right?
Yeah. So that is actually one of the challenges that we're facing in dental education before we get into the clinical world is that, you know, if you look at the area of dental materials, usually it was or still is probably taught by material scientists. And I have the utmost respect for them. Without them, we wouldn't be able to do the things that we're doing for our patients in our clinical practice. But, you know, there were many of the material scientists did not have the opportunity to try the things that they were researching and discovering on patients. And so they were missing that link. And so to be in an area where you can understand the research world, where you can understand the development and be up to speed with the materials that are introduced into our profession, and to be able to evaluate that, to research that, and then take what's useful and apply it in the patient's mouth or in a specific clinical scenario, that's when you really complete the circle. Right. And so that's where I think most of the dental schools are missing out on. And we have a master's program at a dental school in operative dentistry. We added a track to it, actually a concentration or a focus on biomaterials. And the idea behind this course was to train our applicants, the ones that were interested in enrolling into it, who are clinicians seeking a master's degree in operative dentistry or restorative dentistry, which is a highly clinically focused program. If you know, taking them into the laboratory half a day or a day, where they learn how to do these testings, where they learn how to translate dental research into clinical practice, and to gain their interest in material science as clinicians. So now when they graduate from this program, they move along to other institutes and dental schools where they can become teachers. They can teach the topic of dental materials in a clinically applicable fashion or manner. And I think that's where we really need to focus on in dental education, because our students are really suffering. Because if you think about dental materials that was taught in the 70s and 80s, there's about 5 or 6 materials that were out there, and that was it.
Right.
And so now if you look at dental cements alone, there's like 8-9 different types of dental cements. I mean, you talk about the adhesive systems, you talk about ceramics, you talk about composites, impression, et cetera. You can go on and on. How do you teach this to dental students? And when do you teach it to the dental students? So that's been a challenge in the dental curriculum, which I hope and I'm certain that a lot of dental schools are focusing and looking at, because here's what I say all the time. You can be a talented, God-gifted clinician with hand skills and dexterity, but if you select the wrong material and you apply it incorrectly, does it really matter how talented you are or how well you prepared that tooth?
Yeah.
That material is not going to support your work. Patients look for final outcomes, and they don't know how you isolated the tooth, how you prepared it, how wonderful your line angles and convergence and all that. They don't really care about that. They want a final restorative outcome that lasts for a long time. And so something as simple as not knowing how to select the right material and not knowing how to apply it is a big problem, because right. it will ruin your practice. And so when you start talking at that level and you link materials to clinical application and the importance of it to your patient, now you have the attention of the students and then, of course, of the clinicians later on. Right. But so the students, we're undergoing a curriculum change at our school, but the current curriculum right now, dental materials is taught in their first year. They don't even know what a cavity is. How can you teach them about adhesion and restoration of non-carious cervical lesion using composites? They don't even know what a non-carious cervical lesion is. So that's the disparity that we had. That's the gap that we currently have. In most dental schools have the same problem, because I've talked with my friends and colleagues at multiple dental institutes around the world. Right. And this seems to be a major problem. So now you have dental students graduating from dental school with very minimal knowledge about materials. And that occupies, if you ask any general dentist or restorative dentist and you tell them how much, if you think about their procedures and what they're doing, I mean, there is not a procedure that does not involve a material.
Right.
And they're doing about, and we're graduating 80% general dentist and restorative dentist. Wow. So you can see the magnitude of impact of dental materials has on our practice.
Yeah.
And I always say, if you select the right material, apply it correctly, even if you did not perform properly in your restorative procedure, that material might be able to save you if you apply it correctly.
Yeah. Well, I can see this being extra dynamic, because if you're only teaching the materials thing in the first year of dental school, even if you taught it every year, it might have to be a different curriculum every year, because you're like, okay, it's already changed by the time we have the application. On top of it, speak to this. I would imagine if you're a general dentist listening right now, it's probably hard to find an unbiased opinion. You got a supplier telling you one thing. That's why the research part of this is really important. I often wonder, how the heck do you find time to test all this stuff? You know, so it's a moving target.
Well, you're right. And I don't do all the testing all the time. I rely also on some friends and colleagues that have established something similar to what I have at the dental school. And so, you know, we exchange information, we exchange projects, we exchange ideas. We ask questions a lot, and we've been involved with many manufacturers also as opinion leaders and giving feedback to specific materials during their development stage and during the introduction phases as well. But, you know, it remains challenging. And I strongly believe that the manufacturers have always the best intention in mind. They are most manufacturers truly try to develop the next level material or the best material possible, and to serve our patients and to make the clinicians look well in front of their patients. So there's always that strive to achieve excellence and to achieve better, and they do listen. Many of the manufacturers, and they're, you know, the most famous ones in producing dental materials, they listen. They request and require feedback from the key opinion leaders, whether they were in an academic setting, research setting, clinical setting, because they need to make sure that they have fulfilled the requirements and needs that that support this the introduction of this new material. And so, you know, you can imagine our while we're training the dental students on these materials, we're showing them what is available and what's out there. And you're right, we don't give it at just one level. I always try to refresh the information at every possible chance. I direct the advanced operative course for the third year dental students, which they do veneers and partial coverage restorations and complex anterior posterior composites. During that training, I always refresh their information on the materials. And recently a lot of the senior faculty also, or the senior dental student faculty, the group leaders, we call them, or preceptors, they're also coming to ask me, say, look, can you please put together a seminar for our graduates before they graduate on, okay, what do I need to get in my practice related to adhesives? What do I need to know about ceramics? So just, you know, to the point, highlights and remarks that really benefit them. And, you know, now they move along into a private practice and they're exposed with all the sales reps from different manufacturers. They might be associating with a dentist that has been using specific materials for such a long time, and they're not caught up to speed with the development and enhancement in materials. So you have to let them know, like, listen, this is the way to approach things. You can't walk in as a junior dentist and saying, I want to use this material because so-and-so said so. And you have to respect that dentist has been in there for 20, 30 years in that practice and following a specific using a specific material or a specific method. It's been working in his practice or has already practiced for many years. And so, again, that's part of the discussion as well. It's not just material selection and material application. It's how the thought process of, you know, who do you listen to? Where do you gain your information from? Where do you tune in to get updates on, you know, specifically in my area and dental materials and restorative dentistry? Who do you trust? You know, social media and podcasts and all that, it can be very, very helpful. But at the same time, it can be harmful if it's not monitored properly or the misinformation and misguidance. We've seen it all the time. Right. And so it is challenging. And you know, how do you direct someone who's been out of practice 1 to 5 years on to judge what is good and what is bad for them? Yeah. You know, what study club, what group should they belong to? So you see, I mean, the average graduate from a dental school has so much to take in versus the dental student graduating in the 1960s and 70s and 80s. It is just a different world. And sometimes I look at the students, I'm like, are we asking too much from them? You know, I mean, you look at, it's not just the materials, you know, we're talking about restorative dentistry, but there's so many other specialties. And some general dentists do other specialties, whether it's, you know, Invisaligns and ortho or simple endodontics or simple surgeries and implants. And right. So now they have to, you know, put everything together and understand. So it is a big challenge. And we hear experienced dentists that have been 10, 15, 20 years in their practice saying, you know, you guys are, we feel that the fresh graduates coming, asking to associate or working in our practices, they're really not, you know, competent enough is one thing, but also, you know, their information is lacking in certain areas. And there is a big concern. And, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, dark about this all the time, but it's something that we're facing. And I can feel it. And I think that, you know, dental schools, instead of just having one person in dental materials and overlooking that area, I think right now it should be the focus on two or three of them and coming at different levels and different opinions and really training the students on how to become masters at this, because, you know, it's their daily practice. Again, yeah. Which general dentist does not go into their practice and not do an adhesive procedure or an indirect or a direct? I mean, it's their daily practice. Yeah. And that's what we're graduating the most of. Yeah. And so if we want the level of clinical dentistry in the United States to claim the throne worldwide, we have to start from the base. We have to start from the institute, from the dental school, because dentistry right now is no longer, we used to be at the top. I think there are many countries around the world that are doing phenomenal dental research and clinical application that have really put us really behind.
Yeah. And one of my questions is, while you and I are talking about this, is this a concept that most of these schools are even aware of, or are they unaware from your perspective? Because it's a big deal, but is awareness a challenge for the leadership?
Yes, I think awareness is a challenge, because if you think about, again, there's so many moving parts. I mean, as in administration and leadership that they're trying to put together, advancing and changing the curriculum is one of them. If you bring in someone that's changing the curriculum that really does not have, if this area is not represented properly in the new curriculum, then you have a problem. And now good luck within the new curriculum trying to make space or make room for it, right? And so that really has been the call. And that's why in our graduate program, focusing on the residents, most of our graduates go into academics and go in academia. And so we're always you know, training them and teaching them that when you are in your institute, fight for this area because it's very important. And start off by the question, you know, how many of your graduates are going to be general dentists and restorative dentists? And right. most schools will tell you 80, 85, 90% of them, right? Only a few go to specific specialties, you know, that won't be involved at all. I mean, if you talk about a prosthodontist, that's included with restorative dentistry because they also use pretty much the pediatric dentistry. They use the exact materials as a general dentist use.
Right.
And so, you know, in orthodontics, the adhesive technologies and procedures are the same that a general dentist follows. And so you see it really spreads out to all these different specialties as well. And so I don't, you know, it's not acceptable to have a simple course on dental materials that's given in a clinically applicable fashion, you know, early on in their first year. That's no longer acceptable or should be acceptable in any curriculum.
Right.
And really that's the push for it is to, you know, a lot of the dental education courses and is focused on how to teach this and how to do that and how to evaluate and with minimal focus on the content, you know, and the you know, how do you select the right content? Because I can be a great educator, but my content is right. Content is off or, you know, not relevant to my listeners. It won't matter. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough getting dentists to agree on where we're going to eat sometimes. So I can imagine sometimes when it comes to a curriculum, everybody has opinions, you know, and so getting everybody aligned in that respect. Now, one thing, you have many perspectives, like we said before, that a lot of people don't have. So talk about, you bridge the gap because you work with students. You're also out there at the very highest level with the Seattle Study Club and other things with accomplished, you know, clinicians, and they're talk. If I'm a dentist listening, help me understand, you know, what you're seeing in that spectrum between the student and people out there that are playing the game at the highest level. What's your perspective on that?
Well, it's if I didn't love teaching, I wouldn't be in a dental school, right? I mean, and so it is a passion of mine. And so I love everything that I do and I see the challenge and it doesn't put me down. It really makes me push even further to try to address, the disparity or the deficiencies that we're seeing. And so again, just to touch upon starting from the roots, that's the most important thing is getting the dental students up to speed, know the basic components and properties of the material, because that's how I start off every talk is you have a patient in a chair and you're trying to do a restorative procedure. You're going to your materials right now and you're going to have a selection process because there are multiple materials in every category. And so how do you make the proper decision?
Right.
That's the first thing. How do you make that selection? And based off of what? Is it based off of just my opinion or that person's opinion? Or is it based off of clinical-based evidence? Which clinical-based evidence is becoming very challenging in 2021 because of the number of clinical trials are really becoming very deficient with the introduction of restorative procedures and concepts and materials. We should see an increase in number of clinical trials to support all these theories and ideas about restorative procedures and materials. But we don't see that because, it's very poorly funded by any government funding. It's supported usually by manufacturers. Manufacturers sometimes do not need to prove that this material works in a clinical trial setting because it might be an update to an existing material that they've sought approval before.
Right.
And so that remains a challenge because, you know, when you change specific properties in a material or you add components to it, it's always on the expense of another component that might have been working very well. So now, for example, you've increased the translucency, but you've lost strength. And so how do you keep track of that, you know? And so, you know, when you're advertising, you're focusing only on one thing and you're not highlighting that, well, this was the downside of our change in our material. And so, you know, with the lack of clinical trials and you'll see clinical trials like 6 months, 1 year on specific materials, that doesn't tell us much. We need these three, five, and then 10 years. If you look at a lot of the gold and porcelain fused to metal and the conventional cements and amalgam and other classical materials, we have studies that are 10 plus years on them. And those are the studies that count, and the ones that when I'm standing on the stage and explaining, I share with the clinicians, because that is the highest base of evidence, is clinical base evidence. And you share them with, even with their deficiencies, you share the clinical setting and how the findings were made. Well, now we're doing all these in vitro studies. And so how clinically relevant are in vitro studies? So if you're sitting there, and clinicians always have very limited time, they have a busy schedule in their practice, and if they come along some journal or something on their phone, and they see an article related to a material that they're interested in, and it's an in vitro study, they read the purpose, they read the conclusion, and then they make the decision based off of that. And it can be totally misleading and with a lot of misinformation on that specific material. And so what we focused on in our biomaterials laboratory at the school is that we try to maximize the clinical relevance of in vitro testing. And so we have a chewing simulation machine, we have a toothbrush simulation machine. And so every time we do these projects, we try to maximize the clinical relevance to the best possible way in that they are applied in the oral environment. And then we ask manufacturers, would you like to continue or translate the findings from this study into a clinical trial? Most of them are not interested because of cost. I mean, cost is a problem. And then a major problem is the material changes quite fast. So I can tell you recently we're working on a clinical trial related to a bulk fill material. And right. We're moving along in our project. A year later, we're supposed to go up to 3 years. A year later, manufacturer came and said, we got to stop this project. Why? Well, because the material has changed. We no longer are selling this product. It's been upgraded or updated to this material. And so how do you keep up with that? How do you get that 3-year follow-up or 5-year follow-up?
Right.
And by the time I have my data and put it out there in the publication, which takes about 6 months to a year, right? That material no longer exists in the market because something else has replaced it.
Right. And what if the research shows data that we don't want it to show and we put some money for it?
Yes.
That's a possibility too.
We use monolithic zirconia in the millions now in the patient's mouth, because if you walk into any laboratory, 2/3 of their product or their production is on zirconia. And so we are starting to learn and understand a lot about zirconia. There are different types of them. And that's what I really try to explain. Just zirconia alone is like 4 or 5 different types right now. And they're totally different in the way that they perform clinically. And so how do you guide the clinician into understanding the different types and how to apply them? They're using them while I'm sharing with them this information. And so, I'd be lucky to get through to some of them and have them really understand, wait a minute, I've been using this, but I'm probably using the wrong one. If I've gotten away with it, that's fine, but it doesn't mean that I can still continue to get away with it. Remember, we're always trying to pursue excellence, and we're comparing these modern day materials to classical ones that we know worked for decades. And so every time I talk about modern day materials, I always express the importance of, I'm not, directing you to use these materials. I'm asking you to understand, because they're here, they're in the market, but look at the materials I've been using in the past. Offer your patient that gold restoration first, because we know that works. These materials have passed the test of time. These materials haven't.
Right.
And as much as, as much as the advertisement and some of the in vitro research and key opinion leaders' experience with it, okay, is there a 5-year follow-up, a 10-year follow-up? We don't have that.
Right.
And so, how do you make that decision? It's very challenging.
It is very challenging. I mean, even some of the old gold work would surpass our understanding. Like, how long?
Yes.
I don't even know. I should probably look how long that patient's mouth. So, wow, that's fascinating. It was pretty fascinating. Now, go back. You said one of my favorite words that I don't hear from anybody anymore. You use the word preceptor. Now, I love that because I'm 51. When I got started, that was a common term. It was a passion. It wasn't necessarily a role or a duty. It was a passion. There was a passion behind the word preceptor. Can you share what that means to you? What is, first of all, if a young dentist listens, what is preceptor, and where is that now in the day of dentistry?
So this is specifically speaking about our dental school and, you know, how general dentistry has become the theme of clinical education at the third year and fourth year dental student level. And so each group of students will have a leader. They will have a preceptor, someone who has a wide experience in clinical dentistry, and they will serve as, you know, their mentor, their guide, they will guide them through their clinical practice. And it's very important that each school selects these individual very carefully, because the students will be with them for 2 years of their clinical experience. Right. And so we have six preceptors at our dental school, and they have students from the third and fourth year under their guidance and leadership, and they're phenomenal. They're great. I love working with them, and they always are eager to know what's new and to make sure that they are selecting the team of clinicians or educators around them that can best serve their students. So you have these groups that are in a very healthy competition between them and trying to bring in what's best. They work collectively together in a beautiful way. But, you know, you can have a specific preceptor say, hey, can you come to my group and talk to them about this and that? Or if I'm with them on the clinic floor, they know that, for example, Dr. Suleiman is very good at 1, 2, 3 procedures. I want to make sure that my students get a chance to schedule these cases with him or with the other faculty that are good at other things. And so it's that monitoring and that mentorship and guidance is phenomenal for the students. And we see it, because when they graduate, you can see the tears in their eyes that they're gonna miss their family. You know, it's not just their class, it's this group that they have grown with from their third year to the fourth year. They have one specific preceptor or group leader that they follow, and you know, they have a very tight bond. They have a team of hygienists with them. They have a team of dental assistants with them, and they stick together. And so they understand how clinical dentistry works in an office setting. And we no longer call them group this, group that. We call them office A, office B. Wow. It's like a dental office, you know? And so you would have office A with a team leader or preceptor, and you would have dental students, you have dental hygienists, you have dental assistants, and they all work together so that we can, you know, have them understand what a clinical environment is, how to work in a team, how to listen to your seniors, you know, and follow direction, how to work with people that are perhaps, you know, I don't want to say under you, but, you know, that work for you or with you as a dental hygienist, a dental assistant, and how important they are in the success of your practice. And so they get that information a lot. And so it's a wonderful setup. And I don't know what every dental school is doing, but I know ours is, and the ones that I've contacted, colleagues and friends, and I have two brothers that teach at Virginia, also Virginia Commonwealth University. They have the same format. Wow. And actually one of my younger brother became a group leader or preceptor right now. And so it's an honor of a job, right? And it's such an important place in dental education to play.
Yeah, it's so cool. Number one, human beings need other human beings. And then the other thing you learn about being a dentist is the soft skills are critically important. Just how to talk to other human beings, how to relate, the leadership aspect of things. I remember when I was younger, I watched a mature dentist teach all these younger ones to, like, the anesthesia component. Just 30 years of what I've learned, don't make the same mistakes. And it was a full day. I was blown away by the passion that was, you know, heading back to the next generation. So it is so cool what you guys are doing. And I always like to ask this, because you're on the inside. What, I mean, material production is off the charts now. What does this look like to see here in the next 4 years? Is this going to get crazy in the next couple of years? And from your perspective, I mean,
well, you know, the short answer to that is it probably will be. It's not going to be any easier. We're already at a level right now that's very complex. There's no way of going back. And, you know, the development in science is fantastic. Development in technology is amazing. And so to be able to understand these developments from the materials point of view and from technology point of view, blending them together, I think will support your practice and your clinical work. And you know, I always I always tell the students and also to when I'm speaking is that, you know, there's only that 5% of clinicians that seek that level of excellence. You know, do you want to be in that category, right? Do you want to be at that level where, you know, you've optimized your knowledge and information, you're up to speed all the time, you're keeping up with the right people to get that information. And then you're applying it, of course, in the most honest and talented possible way, right? We don't want to go back to the small list of materials available, I think what's important right now, because of the lack of clinical trials, and you know, if you have a representative from a manufacturer knock on your door and come try to show and sell you specific items and products, you have to have the right questions in mind to ask them. And you know, I think they've all found a way to answer you by what's the clinical evidence behind it. They're going to tell you, well, we just launched this material. We have a study going on in so-and-so place. And it's not just in the United States. Other parts of the world are doing these clinical trials. And clinical trials is also, I forgot to mention, the hurdles you have to jump to start a clinical trial.
Why?
In a institute is mind-blowing.
Why?
To a point where you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I mean, and so that's why a lot of clinical evidence-based dentistry is coming from outside of the U.S., right. You know, in countries that have less hurdles to jump and the rules are not as strict as they are here because, you know, I'm doing a simple, well, we call it simple, but a restorative procedure like a class 5 or a class 2 on a composite or an adhesive or a specific ceramic. It's a crown preparation. It's compared to, you know, pharmaceutical investigation on a specific drug or advanced surgical procedure that somebody is using some kind of instrument or tech. It's the same IRB settings that we have to go through because you're dealing with a patient, dealing with a human being. So there's no way of separating the two, right? And so it becomes very challenging. It might take from 6 months to a year to get a clinical trial started. And now, you know, how do you get the numbers up? You need, you know, again, I've seen clinical trials, 20 participants, 6 months, 1 year follow-up, and you're saying you're doing a clinical trial on 20 participants? I mean, come on. I mean, that doesn't work that way. You need numbers, right? Especially if you're doing material selection and restorative procedures, that can only be supported through numbers. And so you have to have a multi-center involved where you have the number of patients really up high and you have to follow up for a considerable amount of years. And I always go back to the manufacturers and say, listen, I know it's not, you know, it's a daunting task to start and to complete a clinical trial. But believe me, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, we're going to look back at the studies that or the manufacturers that stood behind their products, executed a clinical trial, produced a proper follow-up. Those are the materials that are going to stick. So going back to your question, we have a huge influx of materials. Not all of them are going to stick. And so the ones that do have proper clinical trials will stay if they prove to be successful. The ones that have just through key opinion leaders and clinical experience I think we're getting a lot of opinion articles, right, from clinicians who have done their own little trial where they go back and look at how many lithium disilicate or zirconia crowns they bonded using what system and what procedure, and they follow up, and you have to take it for what it's worth. It's not a clinical trial, but you know, it's also valuable information that needs to be shared. And I really encourage clinicians who have a good database system and a large patient base where they've done specific procedures that are considered more modern day procedures using modern day materials, please go back and follow up on these cases. And if you don't have the time to do, reach out to somebody like me, and there's others in dental institutes that will probably come into your practice and seek that specific IRB to get the approval to do these retrospective analysis of things, because it is very valuable. We are that desperate, because you're out there and you're teaching your students. Two students come to you asking you about a specific material or a restorative procedure, and you're like, where did you get that from? And that's just literally, well, I saw it on social media, right? And so what do you answer them? You know, how do you direct them? It is very challenging. So your question was a great one, because, you know, you have a long list of materials that are available. I believe in the next few years, the ones that have clinical evidence to support them, and they're wonderful materials out there. They have helped our work so much. And it's just so sad not to see a proper 5-year follow-up study on it, because that will be the stamp that keeps this material for decades to come. And even if advancements and new materials are introduced, you're still going to be using that one that we know works very well. And so, you know, again, the materials that will stick are the ones that do have clinical-based evidence, that have strong opinion among, you know, top clinicians and academicians and researchers that can support that. But I think you're going to have materials that are introduced very quickly, and then they're out very quick. And they just won't stick. And so, you know, it's, you know, I just encourage clinicians that are, you know, in their daily practice, that are very busy with their patient care and running their business, to, you know, just keep an eye and listen to, you know, things that are available in podcasts or in social media from key opinion leaders and experts trying to share with you what's the latest on these specific materials. What are we going to look for in the next few years? And where are the red flags? Where are the things that you must stay away from and stop using this, because we're seeing failures? And if you remain isolated and ignorant to these things, I think it's going to hurt your practice significantly.
Yeah. And so as I'm listening to you, I'm more perplexed now than ever. I mean, even in the world, a lot of people are getting their news from social media. The challenge is we're not even going to know what's real anymore. I hear it every day, even from my kids. I'm like, where'd you hear that? And they're like, I saw it on YouTube. I'm like, you saw it on YouTube. And
yep.
Those are somehow credible sources now. So if you're a dentist listening, you know you got to pick the right filters to figure out.
Exactly.
That's why I'm a big fan of yours, because we've
Thank
had
you.
So many times. So I'm just saying this, if you're thinking about if you're thinking that you don't know what you're thinking, Tazir is a great person just to bounce questions off. And it's pretty cool to watch. Now, I do want you to talk about this. You actually do a lot of teaching on the outside, and you actually have a program where you talk about what is the program. And what is it? What do you teach? How do you teach it? And what can I expect to learn if I'm a dentist that comes to the program?
Well, I'm smiling because this always starts off by, you know, someone is looking for somebody to speak on materials, right? And then, you know, there aren't many out there that are classified under materials, under restorative. There are many, right? And so they come approaching or asking about, hey, can you talk to us about materials? And I'm like, yeah, sure. By the way, I'm not a material scientist. Don't let that PhD fool you. Okay. And I'm speaking to the director of the club or the organization or academy, wherever it is. And so, you know, I'm relatively new to the game, right? I mean, I've been around in dentistry a lot, but as a focus in dental materials and clinical application, probably the last 5 years. And so, you know, it's like, well, we have to fulfill our requirement to our group, and we have to bring in someone that talks about materials, for example. And so I explain to them, and as much as I can, Chen said, listen, this is not going to be your typical material science lecture. And so when I go into the group, you can see everyone walking in with their four cups of coffee. And they're like, oh, here we go. Yeah. This is going to be the most boring segment of the year in our curriculum. And we're bringing, you know, because they brought in people that spoke about chemistry and physics and things like that. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. I don't use any of that in my clinical practice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've been in those lectures a lot, and I appreciate the science without any without sounding disrespectful to any, without them, we wouldn't be where we're at today. But, you know, it's kind of hard for them to explain specific things of, okay, this is what you do in the patient's mouth. This is how you apply it. This is what you should be focusing on. These are the mistakes that I fell with, and I want you to avoid them. Okay. This is what I found out when I was following up on my cases. So these clinical questions and answers are missing. Right. And so, you know, I tell them, I said, look, I know you're rolling your eyes right now. We're going to talk about materials, but it's going to be the materials of, You just need to understand what the component is. If I ask you a question about what material you're using and you explain it to me by the color of the cartridge or the size of it, I mean, I've had that. I've had it from clinicians that have been 10, 15 years in the practice. They're like, yeah, what's that? What's that cement? It's the yellow and black. And it's like, you're using it daily. You don't know what the name of it is. You don't know. So you're more of just a technician, just technically applying it, right? You're a clinician. You have to add science and knowledge to this so that it becomes the whole picture and the whole circle. Because, you know, now if I'm telling you what adhesive you're using and you can explain it to me, well, these are the steps that I follow. I know, but you have to understand these steps that you're doing. There are other systems that have different steps and why you should be following these steps and not this one. So you start by engaging them and talking to them by how do you optimize your direct and indirect restorative outcome. So now they're starting to listen because this is their daily practice, right? And then you start by saying, listen, this is one slide of a component I know you don't like, but if I'm working on you and you're asking me, doc, what is this material you're using? Well, it's called a composite. I know, but you know, what is it made out of? And you're like, well, you know, I just know it's, you know, it's tooth colored. It has this like a little paste, and you still don't give a proper answer of the basic component. I don't want you working in my mouth, yeah. Right? Period. I mean, you're placing something that you don't know what the very basic component of it blows my mind. And so, you know, you start off by showing them basic component, and then you look at, okay, you're dealing with a tooth on a daily basis. Do you know what this tooth structure has in terms of mechanical properties, optical properties? That's what you're dealing with daily. Right. And so I share with them some information on the tooth structure about properties like the strength, you know, the elastic mod, the rigidity of the tooth. I talk about translucencies because it's a major part of our practice right now is aesthetics. And so understand your tooth structure. And this is where the whole biomimetics idea and philosophy and group play a major role in is understand your tooth. Okay, let's take a look at our materials right now that I told you what the component is. Let's look at the mechanical properties. Let's look at the optical properties, and they are the very minimal. I mean, they are one or two slides, things, and then I put them head to head to the tooth structure. And so now you're starting to compare and you're starting to understand, oh, this is how I link between them.
Right.
And then we move along into, okay, now you've understood. If you've understood this, you know how to select the right material. And of course, you have to get all the research and clinical opinions and that, but that's going to help you. But you're going to have a boost when you understand components, properties of the materials, comparing them to the tooth structure. Now I move along with them to the preparation. This is how you prepare your tooth for that specific material. Okay. After you've prepared the tooth, let's apply the materials. This is the best practice based off of clinical-based evidence, based off of key opinion leaders of how to apply this material, how to place it, how to properly, for example, light cure it, how to properly finish it and polish it through all the, and mentioning all the things that I have grown to learn from experts and sharing with them my mistakes. And I always fascinated about clinicians that stand up there and show you that beautiful work of a class 4 or a veneers before and after. And what they failed to tell us is that it took them about 8 hours to complete that one specific procedure. And they've replaced the rubber dam 20 times and they've isolated a, and how clinically relevant is that? That's not everyday practice. And so, I love seeing that, but then, you know, show me how I can do exactly that in 50 minutes. That's all the time I got. And so that's what I share with them from the clinical point of view is how do you do this in 50 minutes? I show them pictures like, look, I'm just like you. I pulled up my camera, took a photo of that in seconds. I don't have time to do all these filters and all these isolations and everything like that. And so they get to see everyday dentistry, and then I show them follow-ups. I try my best. Folks, this is after 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And so that they can see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I don't filter the, you know, what's, you know, anything that can be deceiving to them. Because even if you have done poor work and you've realized the mistake and error and you show that, you're avoiding somebody else from following into making that same mistake.
Right.
And they are ones that relate to you because they've been through that same mistake also. And so I don't want them to be caught up in all this social media stuff and looking at cases that are beautiful and fascinating. And I tell them this, if I gave you 8 hours to do that procedure, believe me, you will do the same quality of work. Okay. And so, you know, after you've placed it in, okay, what's the clinical base evidence on this specific procedure and materials? How is it doing in the literature and follow-up? I share with them just, you know, basic information on, okay, this material has 5 years follow-up. This is what we're seeing so far. Okay. And so that, and so now I've taken it from component all the way to, all the way to following up on it. So it's a full curriculum on a restorative and material selection. And, you know, I've enjoyed every minute of it that I spend with them. And I love the interaction and questions that you get on emails and in social media. I get emails or sometimes questions from somebody that's listened 2 years ago and thought about a question. And I say, listen, anytime you have a question, I will try to always be there for you. I don't have the answers to all the questions, but I'm blessed to be with brilliant people around me that are much smarter than I am, that I can go and get answers for you. And at least I can translate or give that information to you that can help guide you.
Oh, buddy, this is so awesome. And if you're listening, you already know how passionate this guy is. And so, Tasir, I want people to know who you are. Find where, how can I find you? Where do I find out more if I'm a study club director and I want to have you come speak? How do I get a hold of you?
Well, just share with the email. I mean, with the listeners, I have two emails that we'll probably put up on for them to see. And I'm on Instagram, just Tasir Suleiman, and I'm on Facebook as well. And what I usually try to do there is I share recent findings from our laboratory, and I know publications take a while to produce. And so if I find something that is important and I need to share with folks, I try to put it up there as soon as possible. And the ones that, you know, send me a message or a private message and they need the PDF, I'll be happy to share that with them so that they can, not everyone has access to all these journals and all these publications. And so, you know, these are the things that I really love to share and put out there. So that's the best way to reach me, just through an email or through social media.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, buddy, I can't thank you enough. I'm going to have you back again and again and again. Make sure you check out his stuff. It is fantastic. And you are just an incredible giver to this great profession.
We love you so much. That means a lot. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you for your kind words. That means a lot. Thank you so much.
It means the world to us. So stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening to the Best Practice Show. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, just do us a favor. Hit the share button, share with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see. I'm going to have this brilliant man back again and again and again. Tell me what you want to see, and we'll ask him the great questions and get the answers straight from the expert. So, until we see you guys next time, or you hear from us next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. And there you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.